The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Shane Ross, former minister, columnist of the Irish Independent, is with me for the Thursday interview this week. Shane, how are you?
Kieran, I'm very well. Thank you very much indeed. Yeah. I mean, you can hear my voice that I'm not perfect, but my general health is very good, actually. Thank you.
Yeah. How's the body, as we say in my part of the world?
The body's good. The body was never great, but it's as good as ever will be. A bit de-energized after cancer, but I'm recovering every day. I'm getting more strength back, and I'm doing all those things I did before, walking long distances every day. I'm going to start swimming shortly. So I'm very lucky, and I have a great appetite. You know, when you get cancer like I got it, they feed you like hell. They say you've got to keep eating cream and butter and all that sort of stuff because you don't want to. And you lose a lot of weight. And I'm eating like a horse now, which is really, really a great sign. You know, it's tremendously lucky.
When were you diagnosed?
About June last year. So, May, June.
When now, in hindsight, do you recognise the symptoms of having started?
Well, I think a long time earlier. I think the first sign of it was when I was in the Dáil. And I was a minister and I was being given... out held to by Robert Troy, who's my opposite number, as he did every day.
Yeah,
he was. Although he's now a minister, and he's a very good minister, to be fair to him. So there's nothing personal, but he was giving out hell. And I didn't mind about this most of the time, because I was just used to it. But one day I lost the head, and I decided I'll go back at him. I'm gonna really go for him, because I don't normally do that in that sort of thing. And... I got up to roar and shout at him, and nothing came out. The voice just didn't work. I thought, that's funny. And he was lucky, or maybe I was lucky. It might have been very indiscreet what I said. But then from that, it went away, and I could talk, you know. And then it recurred a few times like that. And I never thought much of it. I mean, a typical stupid man. I didn't do anything about it, except take Strepsils, which did obviously no good whatsoever.
Because there was a bit of sore throat with it then, was there?
Yes, it kept coming sporadically. And it just got worse and worse. And I kind of mentioned it to the doctor, and we didn't do much about it. It was my fault, I'm sure. And then eventually I went to him, and I said, no, I'm losing my voice. This is something more. It could be, you know, vocal cord or something like that. He said, okay, get up to the consultant. And I rang the consultant, actually, and who I didn't know. And it'll tell you how difficult it is. And it was, I think it was April. And I think they said to me, yeah, but we have no space till October. And I said, I reckon I'll be gone by October if I don't see you in this. No, they were very good. They said, come in straight away. Then I didn't know them. And that was diagnosed. So that would be about June, I think, probably. May, I think, it was last year. And then it was very fast. Things move. Once they know, you know, they're absolutely extraordinary consultant doctors. I was in with him, and he had a look at me, poked a couple of things down my nose. And within 3 minutes, he knew exactly what was wrong, what the size of the tumour was, what the treatment would be. But the thing was speed, you know. And the next day, I was in getting all these other tests and things.
Is there a value in that, in the sense that it doesn't allow you to... To reflect for too long about the reality of what you're facing? You know, is there a value in getting swept along by a system of care almost immediately?
You become a kind of non-person in terms of free will. You don't have it unless you're very difficult. And they say you'll do this, that, and the other. And they do treat you like just a body. That's it. You're to be in here tomorrow at this time. Your life just changes. Bang. Everything is medical.
And you have a short-term thing to focus on as well. I guess. The next thing I have to worry about is chemo tomorrow at 10 o'clock.
Correct. All the time. You know, and all you know, you go through, you have to have all the dentists look at you because they don't want anything bleeding, actually. You know, for all sorts of reasons. You have to have all sorts of tests. And they take about a week or maybe a bit longer. And then you're straight into various other treatments with pills and things. I can't remember what it was. But then, they let me stay at home for the pills treatments, which was very difficult for my wife, I think, Ruth, because when you get cancer and you get these pills, you get very cranky, and very difficult.
Crankier.
You're crankier. Crankier. You get more cranky. And I was not a good patient, and I wasn't a nice person to be around. And then they said to me, look, we're going to get you into hospital. I don't think I was quite doing what I was told to do in terms of pills. And they got me in. And they kept me in for 7 weeks, which is a long period. And during that whole period, I was having chemo and radiotherapy and stuff like that. But you just become a completely passive body for those 7 weeks, really, pretty well. And then your voice goes, if you've got cancer in the throat, it kind of almost disappears during that period, which is very frustrating. But it's, you know, I mean, the kind of real message here is it's not a pleasant thing to get. But there are two messages which I'd love to just give, if I may, from it. One is always go early. I got stage three, which is a bit too, you know, long. You should. I always, if you're suspicious at all, go early because you've got a much better chance and you'll get a better cure and you get a quicker cure and you may need less treatment. And I had my treatment was very heavy, chemo, and so it takes longer to recover from it. But the other thing is, which you know, again, my wife Ruth was really good about this, telling me there is a cure. She kept saying, you know, I kind of, you always wonder if you're going to pop off at any moment when this happened. She was saying to me, yeah, you'll be okay. You'll be cured. You'll be all right, which was terribly encouraging. But the reality is cancer is no longer something which deserves the kind of fear that it had in the past.
Yeah.
And the answer is to attack it immediately and not be frightened of it, even though it's there.
Yeah.
Go and get it cured.
Yeah, like, how conscious were you, or are you, or how much did you think about the reality that had you been born in any other generation, you'd be dead?
Correct. I thought about dying quite a lot, because I didn't know. Although people were telling me it was going to be all right. I was conscious of that, yeah, and I'm very conscious of that now. That what I've been going through is an absolute blessing that people a generation back would not have been able to go through because the treatment wasn't there. And so you do feel incredibly, incredibly lucky. And it does, it changes your attitude. I mean, I'm full of cliches, so I won't give them to you, but it does change your attitude a bit when you play, you've diced with this thing, you know.
Had you a healthy relationship with your own mortality beforehand, or was it something you've ever thought about?
I'd never really thought about it. And
you're like me.
Yeah,
you think we'll just go forever.
Yeah, that's right. You think you'll go forever and you plan for five years, 10 years, and you don't want to face it because you don't know what it's going to be like next time around, if there is one. I'm a total coward. I'm a physical coward. I'm a coward as a patient, and I'm certainly frightened of talking about things like that or thinking about them. And I don't see there's much point because you don't know the answer to any questions you ask. You know?
Well, was there ever a period, maybe it was immediately after the diagnosis when it happened, maybe it was in the 7 weeks in the hospital, where any of those thoughts would have overwhelmed you, where you thought, you know, the prospect of this being the end of it all?
No, I didn't. I didn't let myself think that way because it was pointless. And, you know, I had always something to look forward to. I was very lucky. I was in St. Luke's in Redcar. And I was very, very lucky indeed. I couldn't have chosen better. Very unfortunate for my family, who were wonderful, but my son has a house in Ranelagh, and my daughter in Terenure. So they came in regularly, and my grandchildren as well.
They had no excuse. So
they had no excuse not to come in. So they had to come in. And that kept my mind going all the time. There was a visitor every day, but I didn't tell anybody else because I didn't. You know what it's like in hospital. If you tell people, they feel an obligation to come see you.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you about that, about not trying to keep that circle small. I read you, I was, you know, reading your column when you came back writing.
Yes.
And I nearly laughed out loud when Michael Healy-Ray was the first to get a sniff of it, unsurprisingly.
Yeah.
But why that decision, and how difficult was it? Because, you know, you've got a public persona and a presence and people would have wondered, oh, where's Shane Ross gone?
Yeah, I don't think they missed me very much, actually, to be honest. But I think, I didn't want people to know. First of all, it shows awful weakness. I didn't want people writing me off as, you know, as dead or dying, which is what people do when they say, oh, he's got cancer. It's a kind of code for he's very ill and mightn't be with us for very long.
You know, there's obituaries written about you in the Irish Independent, the Irish Times.
Yeah.
Do you ever think about that?
No, I don't. I don't want to.
But there would be.
Yeah, I think they have everybody ready, or they'd have someone teed up for every senator and DD and whoever you are. Yeah, I don't think I'd hate to.
You didn't want them to activate it. Your point.
I didn't want them to activate it. I don't want to read them because, you know, they won't be published until a different time. But no, I didn't. I didn't really give that much that area of things, very much thought. Except maybe you get into a bit of unreality when you're on heavy morphine. They give you morphine.
Yeah.
And when you get into that area, you don't think you're hallucinating. You're not really. But you're getting into kind of unreal world and you have funny dreams about funny things. So you move on slightly from normality. But I didn't get morbid or depressed, no.
How fatiguing did the whole thing get? Just, you know, it's just dragging on. I want this to be done with.
Yeah. They tell you. I mean, they're absolutely wonderful, St. Luke's. They tell you. When they give you a little briefing, and they tell you the best case scenario, which is okay, which they don't tell you any lies or anything like that. They say you're going to come in, you're going to have this, you're going to have that. Then you say, well, how bad will it be? And they say, we don't know, which is true.
Yeah,
it depends on the person. And they say some people come through, walk through it. They're young people, though, I think, to be honest, much younger. So what happens? No, you get increasingly fatigued and you lose a lot of energy. Well, in my case, you lose a huge amount of energy and you can't kind of do very, very much and you're very bad tempered and nobody wants to live with you, you know, and that sort of thing. So it is fatiguing and you lose your appetite. And I was put on a tube for several weeks. And the funny thing about being put on a tube was I didn't want to go off it because my throat was very sore and it relieved so much of the pain of eating, which was very, very difficult. So I didn't want to go off it. And one of the reasons I was stayed in for so long is because I was on this tube and they didn't know whether to take me off or not. Eventually, they actually said to me, you know, we're going to take the tube out and you're going to go home, because I was getting to kind of a little bit institutionalized. I kind of like being looked after.
Yeah.
There's a terrible feeling of safety if you're a coward. You know, I felt very safe in the hospital. I wasn't sure I really wanted to go home.
Yeah.
They said, you're going home. And then things got better. Yeah. Much better.
And during all of this, how engaged were you with everything that was happening in the world? I mean, did that change? Did you kind of pull back from following the news day in, day out? Were you listening to the radio? I know you were listening to The Hard Shoulder.
I was listening to The Hard Shoulder every day.
And watching The Tonight Show and all of that.
That's right, The Tonight.
But, you know, did that all change?
No, not really.
Okay.
That was strange. Ruth brought me in the newspaper every day because they didn't have newspapers in the hospital, which was great. So I'd read it. I wouldn't always read it as well as I didn't read as well as I normally did. I had a radio, which I listened to at various times. I listened to you and I listened to lots of others. I wasn't writing a column, obviously, or anything like that then. So I wasn't as kind of intense about hearing anything that was happening.
Did it change how you engaged with it? When you weren't thinking of, I've got to get a column out of this, or there's something in that, or, you know, did it cause you maybe to stand back and reflect on it maybe in a more broad sense?
Absolutely. Okay. Totally different. You enjoy it.
Yeah, okay.
And sit back and, I mean, Vinnie McGraw used to always say to me about the cabinet, you know, sit back and enjoy the show. I don't think I'll participate today. And yes, you become a sort of passive listener. You see things in a very relaxed way, because you know and I know that everything you see, if you're into this business, and you know much better than I would, if you're writing a column every week, which is kind of politically driven, you're thinking, is that, will that do? Can I help that? Will that be any use all the time? You know, so it does change. It makes you very, very passive indeed, and you accept more. You suddenly realise you're believing everything you hear on The Hard Shoulder, you know.
That's what I like to hear. One of the things that always struck me post-COVID is how quickly we all just went back to normal.
Yeah.
And I always give the example of, I remember listening to an architect on the radio suggesting that houses in the future would always have kind of personal hygiene stations designed into them. You know what I mean? That life would never be the same again. And of course, life immediately went back to being what it was pre-2020.
Yes.
Had you a version of that? Were you leaving hospital thinking, right, I'm post-COVID, cancer Shane is going to be different from pre-cancer Shane? And maybe it has been different, maybe you are different, or maybe after a while you realise, you know, beyond the kind of croaky voice and the slight low energy levels, I'm actually back to myself.
Yeah, I think you do return.
Yeah.
Actually quite quickly.
That's a good thing though, I like that.
It is, it is. I mean, you're dictating to a certain extent by your physical condition, and the first few weeks at home were difficult because I wasn't able to do very much. But no, you're longing to get back, to get to doing this and to eating the things that you can. You know,
yeah,
that's terribly important. You know, you you can't eat anything which isn't soft when you start off with, you know, it's all porridge and stuff like that, scrambled eggs. But then you get back to it and its normality returns fairly fast. You know, you kind of have bad days and you can't do some stuff.
Mm.
But you do know, and does your attitude change? You're asking me that?
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah. I'm not sure that it does. I think you make a lot of resolutions. You say, if I get out of this, I'm going to do so and so.
Yeah. Foxhole resolutions.
Yeah, that's right. But I've kept one or two of them. But I think others have kind of lapsed a bit. Yeah. You know, you get back into being with all your old flaws and sins reemerge, I'm afraid. Yeah.
Yeah, don't say I'm afraid. I like the idea that we kind of revert back to our former selves. I think there's something kind of to be said for it. Before I let you go, then, what piece of food, what food item, what dinner were you most looking forward to eating again that you couldn't?
I love beef.
Okay.
I couldn't eat beef for months.
You're the reason that the price of steak has been going up for the last couple of months then. Yes, it's the post-recovery thing.
Well, I'm back in time for that. Now, like, all the meats which were just too tough to eat for months and months and months.
Yeah.
But I'm back to that now. So really there's nothing to complain about at all, except to say, you know, thank you to everybody, because I've been damn lucky. Actually,
yeah.
You know, I mean, this voice is good compared to what it was 6 weeks ago. So it's great.
Back to beef, back to walking, back to swimming soon.
Yeah.
Back to the Colliums.
Yeah.
Get checked out early.
Yeah, get checked out early and don't be frightened of cancer. I mean, that's really important.
Yeah.
Because it can save your life. It's as simple as that.
Shane, thanks a million for coming into us.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it. Shane Ross.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.